How do you make meaningful work in a noisy world? Welcome to Growing a Fruitful Brand, where we discuss how to create and grow a brand that makes the world a better place for you, your customers, and your employees. I'm Ben Luters, founder and art director of Fruitful Design and Strategy. And I'm joined today by my good friend, Craig Neschlinas, co-founder of Lens Distortions. A few weeks ago, I had his business partner and my other friend, Jonathan Kaiser, on the podcast. And in that episode, we get all into what Lens Distortions is, what they do, and all about the ethos behind their brand. So if you want to learn more about Lens Distortions, check out that episode. But really, the reason I've got Craig here today is because we had this amazing coffee conversation a few months ago. And I the whole time I'm thinking, this guy needs his own podcast. He thinks so deeply about everything. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And so when we were talking offline, we were saying we don't necessarily want to get into the ins and outs of every technology and every trend that's happening right now, but really more of, we want to talk more about how to think about the changes around us. How do we think about the technology and the different mediums that are changing around us? How do we think about that well? So to kind of tee us up, Craig, what is your kind of general consensus of the changing world that we live in, especially for us in the creative field?
That's a big question. I would say that my general consensus is I don't know what's happening or what's going to happen, you know, by and large, but it can be fun to speculate, you know, but I mean that genuinely in that, there's a lot of people who claim to know a lot of things about how the world is changing, what the next 10 years are going to look like, disruption, whatever. I think things are moving fast, but when the dust settles and what that looks like could look a lot of different ways. And so I think it's a lot of observing and just sort of like watching and predicting. But one thing I've kind of chewed on is thinking back to like the 2000, 2001 kind of dot-com bubble that was going on. And we were pretty young at that time.
It's been a while.
But, you know, it seemed like the overarching idea there was that everyone thought like the future is now, it's here, we're ready for it, let's go. People invested in everything and thought like, this is here to stay. And it was kind of a preview of all the things to come, but the world wasn't ready for it all at once. And so you had a lot of stuff that kind of fizzled out and a lot of, you know.
What I think of is pets.com. Yeah. Do you remember when pets.com did all those Super Bowl ads and they're the little like sock puppet?
Yeah,
and
then,
like,
I mean,
they lasted like a year after that.
I think that's what a lot of people think of, stuff like that. Like anything that can be put on the internet, people will want to buy on the internet and they'll want it now. Well, I mean, that is true today, but it took 20 years to get to that, you know. And so, I mean, I think a similar thing with AI and machine learning and all of that, like, it's certainly a glimpse of the future of things that we will use, and we can already start using it in super meaningful ways now, but also there's all kinds of stuff you can do with it that isn't quite refined or isn't quite ready or requires so much hand-holding or prompting from somebody that is actually sort of saving them time in some of those aspects. So, I don't know. I'm not worried about it. Like, I also think, like, for me personally, in our company, I mean, we serve creators. We serve people who are using like their creative skills to create something that didn't exist before. And last I checked, they weren't going through all that work just, you know, because they had to do it manually and they hated it or whatever. Like, they like the creative. You like the creative process, right?
Exactly.
Like, so. I think it's stuff that creative people, this is another tool in their tool chest to automate some of the stuff that maybe is more cumbersome or whatever. So certainly something to pay attention to, something that, you know, we'll pay attention to in our company and try to figure out how to integrate and use in thoughtful and tasteful ways. But it's not like a new thing. I mean, AI is a technology on a huge, massive scale, bigger than a lot of things, but it's still sort of technology times what? It's amplifying what? It's being trained to do what? You know, humans for now are still, you know, picking what that it should be levering against. So, it needs to be thoughtfully used, I guess I would say. And I'm more skeptical of humans' ability to use AI, you know, in meaningful ways than I am of AI being able to eventually do whatever we want it to. You know,
is there anyone that you think should be concerned about their job because of AI? I think that's one of the things that, you know, especially when, you know, first, you know, DALL-E and, you know, some of these, you know, visual things. There's, I think there's a lot of designers and illustrators that are like,
oops. Yeah, I mean, I think Siri, my watch just went off.
Did you hear that?
But Siri should be concerned about her job because AI is here to eat her lunch. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you're doing something that's a pretty monotonous task, that's just like whoever's employing you to do it wasn't able to find, you know, another way to replicate that. If it's a commodity, like that's what technology is good at replacing over time, is something that people are doing over and over and over again.
But in that analogy, Emma, in that example, it's like, again, it's not so much about replacing jobs, it's more like being a tool in someone's, like I think of, you know, how AI technology has improved, you know, the time that I used to spend trying to cut people out of in Photoshop, you know, and now that stuff is like instantaneous.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of that kind of stuff, like this was just a monotonous. Now, if your whole job was just cutting people out in Photoshop, which has been actual jobs, you know, for people, I guess, you know, some of them might be concerned, but, you know, I'd hope that those people would be able to, you know, use this technology to, you know, make their jobs even better and deeper.
Yeah. And I think that there's aspects of what people will use AI or generative art in this case for that, like they're in some ways replacing something that's already been commoditized with a different way to kind of do it. Because I say that, I mean, there's great artists that make stuff from scratch that get paid to do that. And that's really, really good. But we're also in a world where everything's on the internet and people have produced free stock imagery of all kinds of stuff. And so you already have people leveraging that free stock imagery. And so the price has gone down. What people are willing to pay, like a true artist to make something custom, has become, that's like sort of less in demand. But in some ways that makes it more special. It's like, because for the people who are willing to employ an artist to do something manually and put a labor of love into it, that makes it special. But, yeah, I think it's like if you are creating a custom, you know, generated art of something you prompted it to versus searching, you know, free or cheap stock imagery to find something that is similar, you know, that could be an example of where it's actually just improved the workflow, but it hasn't necessarily devalued a human's work. The commoditization of human's work kind of happened, you know, before that in some way, which is an unfortunate thing in some ways, but I'm just saying like, AI didn't do that, you know. It's just—it's just sort of opportunistically adding technology to something that was already disrupted by technology over time. The internet made cheap assets available.
So, how would you, Craig? How would you define meaningful work? Because I think as creatives, you know, we all want to create work that is meaningful, right? That's lasting, that's timeless. But like, how would you define that? And how would you, you know, I know this is really broad. That's kind of the point of today's conversation. Think about some of these broader thoughts. But like, you know, how would you encourage creatives to seek out meaningful work or go about it?
Yeah, I mean, meaningful work and meaningful creativity is in no way separated from what's meaningful for people and relationships and what. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it, I mean, you're a story brand certified agency, like that whole thing is about story and the power of story and people respond to story. And so whether you're illustrating a logo, something you do regularly, or you're cutting together a film or you're writing a song or an album or whatever, I mean, you're telling stories. You are in some ways telling a story as old as time of just the human experience, right? So that is where meaning comes from, is people we love or know or people we can relate to going through this thing called life where there's challenges and triumphs and, you know, end result of that. And that's the story, right? And so I often like to think about meaningful work and meaningful creating and storytelling sort of as the opposite. What's the opposite of meaningful? And it's shallow, right? In our company, we always say, like, in an increasingly superficial and commoditized world, we exist to help people create more meaningful work. And we believe that. Like, I mean, the world is getting increasingly more noisy and there's a lot of shallow stuff. And a lot of people are optimizing for what gets clicks, what's going to get attention, you know? And that's fine, but that's a tactic. That's not saying what's worth getting attention or what do we sort of convictionally want Instagram to be, or what do we want culture to be like?
I think about this every time I create the YouTube thumbnails for this podcast. Yeah. I'm like, do I need to have those like little red arrows that point at
something? Do you use the clickbait playbook?
Yeah.
Or do you use like the design aesthetic that's true to you?
Right.
And guess what? Your design aesthetic is cooler, but we'll probably get less clicks
because it doesn't hack the brain in the right way.
At some
point, the cool thing about YouTube is you can switch all that stuff out later too and try different things. And so one night I'm going to switch everything to these really clickbaity, terrible things. And we're going to see how much better our podcast does. But anyways.
Every other one, the title also has to be like, we're finished. I'm done.
That's
you
right.
know, it's over, whatever.
Raj like yelling.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I feel that, you know, now. So I think probably now because I have, you know, just like everyone else, a podcast and posting more content and all this stuff, you just start noticing like, oh gosh, it is a noisy world. There's so much going on. And then now, you know, you take Instagram, for example, think of all the AI generated things you're seeing too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if it's just me because I am an illustrator and because I am, you know, what I would consider an artist, like, I still feel like I gravitate more towards things that are really created by hand, things that are created really by other people.
Mm-hmm. You know,
sometimes an AI generated thing might get me to click and be like, oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
There's actually an account that I started following. It was like beautiful interior, like interiors of buildings and stuff like that, and like cabins. And it was just like beautiful. Like I thought it was like amazing, you know, photography. It's actually all AI generated.
You thought it was like an architecture
yes.
portfolio, but
yeah.
it was actually like a kid in his basement somewhere else.
Exactly. Yeah. Just generating these like beyond perfect, you know, aesthetics of little cabins and stuff.
Yeah. And so the thing with that is like, I'm sure you probably feel this. I am so desensitized to amazing visuals.
Right.
I've been around them for so long and Instagram puts so many of them in front of us that
oh, yeah.
it's like, we're not impressed by incredibly refined, you know, mm-hmm. like visual compositions and just imagery, right?
Right.
And so I think that leaves you going like, cool, this is stimulating, but like I'm looking for story and meaning and,
right.
you know,
right.
I mean, you could just scroll forever and see stuff that looks really, really cool. But
mm-hmm.
Eventually you're like, whoa, what's the point, you know?
Well, and I think that's why, yeah, people connect with, you know, they connect with like humor, the storytelling, stuff like that. You know, one of the AI things that kind of took the world, you know, by storm, which I'm sure you've seen, is like all those Wes Anderson like versions of Lord of the Rings and Star Wars. I just saw one of like a Harry Potter one that people had made. But I think it's the story that's really interesting. It's like, oh, that is a fun mashup that we can like imagine, like, what would Harry Potter be like if it was directed by Wes Anderson?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's a fun exercise in you know, creativity, in thinking. I think that's one of the more interesting, I think, use cases, you know, of AI in that kind of a realm.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of back to the bigger question, you know, what thoughts do you have around, you know, we've already started talking about Instagram, social media and stuff like that. Like, how do you think about those things? Because obviously you're, you know, I don't get the sense that you spend a ton of time just scrolling feeds. Is that safe to say?
Well, I mean, I'm human like everyone else. So I think I get into seasons where I do that mm-hmm. and I notice it. And I like, I would say I'm in that season right now.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I spend more time on feeds than I'd like.
Than you'd like
you know?
To.
But the thing is like knowing that you have a weakness to something doesn't make
right.
you resistant to it. The ways that you have to kind of, I mean, I've had seasons of life where I've unfollowed everyone on Instagram. So I
yeah.
still had it. You could
Guilty.
DM me or whatever,
that, yeah.
but like there was no stimuli to be like, you know, there's just nothing in my feed, you know?
Right.
Unfortunately, yeah, Meta got pretty good at, we'll just show you other stuff. If you don't follow anyone,
yes.
we'll just show you other stuff, you know? So, but trying to stop that habit of just impulsively kind of filling your empty space with that. But yeah, and then the other things, I mean, truly, like this, you might not know this, there's most people know about screen time, but you can
yes.
limit, you can sort of set up reminders to automatically sort of close you out of any given app. So I have
mm-hmm.
that set up specifically only for Instagram. It's the only app on my phone that's that way. But then also, interestingly, I found this recently, within Instagram, there's a similar thing where it'll pop up a reminder. Of course, it won't close the app. Like, they're not, they're just trying to be like, we were responsible.
We did what we had to do.
This was to convince some regulators that we're not a highly addictive drug. But yeah, that's in there too. So I actually have them both turned on, both at the iOS level and at the Instagram app level. So that it will be annoying. Like, I want to be like stuck in like a doom scroll, and then I get scroll. Like one pop up, and I'm like, no, just 15 more minutes, you know? And then another one pops up, and I'm like, okay, like
I've got a problem.
It's time to be done, you know?
I didn't even realize.
But you need those things to break you out of just the like, oh, that's interesting. And you go down these rabbit, you know, trails of chasing stuff. So,
well, and I think you know one thing that I've noticed kind of change about me, I think now that I'm creating more content, whether it be with the podcast or, you know, other things for my company or even myself personally on my personal Instagram, like sharing illustration work that I'm doing. I think when I'm actually creating and contributing instead of just consuming, it's a different relationship too, you know? And I think that there's something, you know, interesting about that. Like there's something about If everything, if it's all one way, it doesn't. It feels kind of weird. It feels like an addiction or something.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not a two-way kind of relationship. And so I have, you know, similar to you, I have kind of a love-hate relationship with social media in general.
Yeah.
But I find that it feels like healthier when I'm actually contributing to it as well.
You know?
And telling stories and sharing things, and then also interacting with people too. Because it is social media, right? Isn't that like the original point was to help connect us with people? I feel like the way that it's become, it's not very social. It's hard to be social. It's more like, it's all about likes. It's all about, you know, you're just scrolling, just consuming. But like, if you stop and actually like, say something meaningful on a post or DM somebody, you know. I think John and I have probably had more conversations on Instagram DMs than we have anywhere else.
Yeah.
You know, and you can still do that, you know.
Well, actually, I mean, and that's what's most normal, I think. I think everyone is mostly posting stuff and then their friends are private messaging them about it, you know. And even the head of Instagram, I saw something a few months ago where he was like, messaging is just the thing that's growing more than everything else. Like, it's not as much this broadcasting platform as it is. Like, everything is just different ways to message. And we saw this with the apps over time. It used to be like a portfolio for cool pictures, you know, that you took with your phone. And now it's like, well, what's the difference primarily between Instagram and Facebook and WhatsApp and all these things? Like, they own all the messaging apps and they're all just like, you know, and then they added in the features that Snapchat had. Let's do ephemeral messages. That's what stories are, right? You know, that was, and then they're like, oh, people are doing that more because it's less intimidating and they just like make this thing and it goes away or they just send it to their close friends. So like everything is just a kind of like a different way of framing up an excuse to like post some stuff so your friends will message you in some ways. Now, influencers, you know, I don't know. That's maybe a little bit more about like likes and comments and that and I don't know. I never tap like on anyone I don't know's like posts. So I don't know. I try to like not give the algorithm information either. You know, you gotta be like,
Craig knows too much.
Yes, maybe.
But. He's trying. Doesn't want to give him too much. Well, it is interesting because like you know I found, you know, and I'm sure this is like the search page or the like page, whatever you call it on Instagram. You know, it's serving up stuff that it thinks that you like based on your activity. So like I started realizing, you know, I started noticing as I started liking and clicking on more watch related stuff. So I've really gotten into watches. John and I were like geeking out about it before and after our podcast interview. And now you go to my search page, it's just all watches, which is awesome.
The reason I'm laughing is because I remember one time, like probably a year or two ago, I got in this weird cycle. If Instagram thought I liked like really big trucks, like monster trucks. Like,
Isn't that your thing?
Yeah, I mean,
I was telling the algorithm.
That's
Craig
the problem.
Loves these.
Yeah, like I don't recall ever searching for anything related to that or what. I don't know how it got that idea, but then I was kind of like intrigued, you know? And so then it's like, well, hold on, don't Don't let your gaze look at that, because, you know, they've somehow broken their relationship with, you know, your iPhone and are actually using the sensors to
read your,
you know, I'm not conspiratorial, but if you linger on anything, they'll show you more of that, you know? So it's
if you linger, that's interesting. And so that's why Craig is so into trucks now. You should have seen the truck he drove up in, guys. It was a monster truck.
And it's all thanks to Mark Zuckerberg, because he put that on my feed and I bought it. So,
I'm curious, do you have any hot takes as far as, since we're talking about social media, any hot takes on what you kind of, where you see social media going?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not super optimistic about, you know, wherever I see it going. I think the unfortunate thing is that it's all so popular social media, all the predominant platforms are built on the premise of how do we hack, you know, human psychology to get their attention, you know, fixated. And so there's plenty of people, like expats of these companies, who have come out and said, like, I don't like what I was part of building there. Mm-hmm. And so there's an interesting dilemma, though, you know, and even what we're doing, our company, we're hoping that the stuff that we sell has a high correlation to like ending up in meaningful content. But of course, we can't control what content it's a part of, but then I even think about, like, you know, how do we help support those people so their work gets noticed? Like, if you make a really great documentary about a local organization in Omaha who's doing super meaningful work, like, that's a meaningful story, and therefore that's the substance for, you know, meaningful storytelling. But how do you get that noticed? And how do you get it noticed without sort of doing the sugary, you know, clickbait playbook that gets other things noticed? Hey, here's, you know, three hacks to do this thing or whatever. Or super authoritative, just like talking to the camera and grabbing people's attention. How do you help? You know, and a lot of times social media is this like escapism. Like, it's sort of a way to be entertained and distracted from whatever's going on in your daily life. And that's fine. But if these platforms are also how we're disseminating content and disseminating meaningful stories, like, how do those break through? You know, for us, it's like we only kind of make like music that's pretty tasteful and pretty well suited for like a meaningful story. So we kind of just hope that, like, by limiting the selection to stuff that is a good fit for meaningful stories, people will make more of it. Mm-hmm. And that maybe music has this amazing ability to like make you feel emotions, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe one of the ways that people can cut through the noise is just with, you know, using music and thoughtful editing to grab people's emotions, you know, and be like,
oh, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a tough problem to solve. And all apart from content creation, I just think, like, it seems like attention spans are going in one direction, which is like shorter. And you see this with kids, you know, their ability just to pay attention. Can kids even watch movies now? I don't know. Probably. But like, probably not as well as we used to be able to watch a 2-hour movie, you know, because if you're just watching short stuff and switching to the next thing and switching to the next thing. I'm interested in, like, are there ways for people to do one thing for a long time? So I think YouTube's interesting this way, because there are some creators that are really good at storytelling, and they'll keep people engaged for an hour. Like,
oh, yeah,
we're going to go do this thing today. Come with me, you know, whatever.
That's right. Guys like us. I mean, I'm sure this will be an hour conversation, and you're going to listen all the way to the end and like and subscribe.
Yeah. So
ring that bell.
That's meaningful storytelling too. I mean, doesn't this have to be like tug at your heartstrings type stuff? It's like, do you have the ability to keep people engaged and do something relatable and whatever, versus just like, you know, flood their brain with dopamine for 5 seconds before they do that again and again and again.
Do you think that the social media platforms, you know, Facebook, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, you already joked about, Elon Musk, these guys, that like, they're going to swing the other way. They're going to see all the signs and be like, oh man, we've been, you know, getting people addicted to their devices, and they're really going to, you know, de-incentivize those things? Or is it like, no, it's about making money. It's about attention span. Like, we have to keep these things as addictive. Like, will the feed ever end? Yay. Will they, you know, like, for example, you know, I know that there are some feeds and stuff that, like, they only scroll so far. I've heard that, or like the Visco app doesn't display likes, you know. I guess apparently in the settings of Instagram, you can shut off seeing likes. Mm. I was just talking to a friend who's you know, actually has a lot of followers on Instagram, but he turned off the ability to see likes on Instagram, and I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think unfortunately, and like we're not immune to this either, but the things that we like aren't the same things as what we know we need. And so, like, you know, you can be like, oh, I love Instagram. I love, like, looking at just, you know, big trucks, right?
That's my thing.
And be like, also, I waste an hour a day doing that or something, right? But it still doesn't necessarily change the habit, right? And so people know that they don't even want to necessarily, you know, use these apps the way they do, but they still do. And so I think a lot of these business owners and, you know, publicly owned companies, they're just trying to say, like, what can we do to, you know, increase engagement and continue to grow and all of this. And I'm not against publicly owned companies in any way, but, you know, I just don't think they have very good incentives to do things that are healthy. They have good incentives to do things that keep the apps going. But I guess if I had to guess, I would say that more likely than them changing in meaningful ways is that they'll just be subverted by the next generation of things, and a younger generation of people will, you know, give traction to something that's a little bit different, a little more personal, you know, maybe more specific to their close group of friends, more casual, something like that. And then, you know, the big incumbent platforms will figure out ways to try to adapt and latch on to that. I mean, that kind of happened. Like, Instagram was for, like, you know, people who are now in their 30s and 40s, you know, in the Bay Area it started, right?
Right.
And
do you remember some of those terrible photo filters they had back in the day?
They were great. Yeah.
Took a picture of your food and
you know, it's like sepia.
Really, really
X-Pro 2 maybe was one of them.
But
so I think that probably, but where I was going with that is Instagram adopted the things from a more younger generational app like Snapchat. And then you know, it's interesting now TikTok is like seems like hotter than everything else, and so I'm sure the apps are figuring out ways to integrate.
And stuff, you're big on TikTok, right?
I spend an hour a day looking at big trucks on Instagram, but I spend like 10 hours a day learning dance moves on TikTok. So
I've not ventured there. I have not ventured on the TikTok.
And
one thing that I think is interesting too is you know, focusing, like limiting yourself, you know, even as company. One of the first things that we advise other companies, because everyone wants to know, what should I be doing on social media? One of the first things we say is, like, pick one. You know, it'd be better if you were, like, posting more regularly and engaging more on LinkedIn or X or whatever your social media of choice is,
right?
Than trying to, you know, get on Pinterest and get on this and get on that, you know, like feeling like, and so just focusing, and it's okay if you don't have, you know, one of the 10 social media platforms, you know, and which ones make the most sense for you and like what you're trying to accomplish. And so, I think like giving people permission to like, you know, to kind of show discretion and just wisdom on like, what can I handle? You know, like recently, we pretty much just post on LinkedIn and Instagram, Fruitful. And YouTube, I guess. YouTube. And YouTube is my favorite. I love YouTube. I spend probably the most time on YouTube these days.
Do you get more traction if you say, I love YouTube?
That's right. I love you, YouTube. I'm hoping this video will get bumped up in views because of that. And all the money, obviously all the money that we get from our views now.
Unfortunately, there's not like a widely known overlord on YouTube whose name you can mention. I don't. CEO changed somewhat recently, but you don't got like Zuck or Musk or.
In fact, if we say their names, we might actually go down. So, you know,
I don't know.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure who we should be saying.
Actually, I think the algorithm favors controversy. So, no matter what, we're good.
That's probably true. Okay, speaking of hot takes, though. Do you have a hot take on, this wasn't in our questions that I sent over, but the metaverse? How are you feeling about the metaverse these days?
It's interesting. Jonathan, my business partner, and I remember having a debate a couple years ago where he was like, this is so dumb. Nobody wants this. It's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember telling him, like, I don't disagree with you about the first part, but I think that like these companies are just going to will it into existence. They're going to figure out a way to do it, you know, and figure out a way to commercialize it and get people hooked on it or whatever. And that remains to be seen. But I thought, I don't know if you saw the thing with Alex Friedman.
Dude, I was just
recently
about to bring
scanned in.
I was just about to bring that up.
His sort of emotional reaction. So he got scanned into the metaverse and had a conversation with Mark Zuckerberg where they weren't in the same room, but he felt like they were sitting across from each other like we are.
Or and
are
if you we? Watch this.
Are we in the metaverse? I don't know.
Yeah, actually, we're going to reveal at the end that this is actually not. We're not
I am
in the same
Mark
room.
Zuckerberg. So
and I'm Lex Friedman. I've just been, you know, changing my voice for this.
And podcast. Now we're going to fight.
Now we're gonna fight the controversy. we're gonna wrestle right here on the mat. We're gonna get into some Brazilian jiu-jitsu. What is that? What they do? But yeah, that kind of did blow me away. Just because you know the metaverse was like it was a fun thing to make fun of a few years ago, and it was like these disembodied, like you know, Wii Sport looking people, like you know, no arms or legs, and it's just like you know, the graphics itself is just like, what? Why would I ever choose to do this instead of like just live in real life? Like, I'm not really following. Then I watched some of that interview, Lex Friedman with Mark Zuckerberg, and I was like, okay, this is like. This is next level. Mm-hmm. I still don't fully understand all the, and I probably still identify with John Kaiser. Like, why do we need this? Yeah. But at the same time, it's like I'm paying closer attention. I'm taking it a little bit more seriously. I'm interested to know where this could go.
Well, I think it's similar to the AI conversation, where what technology makes possible does not mean the same thing as how do people leverage this in meaningful ways.
Right,
and so. I mean, it's funny, as you were talking, I was even thinking just about like, my mind always tries to go down the road to the future of like, how else will people use this? And I was thinking about things like, if you could have like a parent or a loved one who, you know, is scanned in as an avatar and it has their voice and AI could potentially like, you know, make them say anything, or they just have a recording of them. And say that loved one passes away, and then you're able to go in the metaverse and have like a conversation or to sit and listen to them. Is that actually good for you?
Right.
Or should you have the closure of like, no, this person has moved on, you know?
Well, doesn't Alexa already do that? I thought there was like some big story about how Alexa can take the voice of anyone and that already like people having conversations with, you know, I think it was Alexa. There's so much. This technology is moving so fast. Yeah. But I already heard Raj shared that with me, a story of basically having AI conversations with a deceased relative's voice.
That seems like very emotionally treacherous.
Yes.
You know?
I feel that's an ethical line, isn't it?
I think, like, my dad died when I was 20. That's
right.
13 years ago.
Right.
I don't want to open that, you know, Pandora's box back. Oh, I have, you know, 13 years of somewhat closure on that, you
Absolutely.
Know? Like, so I think about stuff like that. But at the same time, and I think a lot of people would, you know, agree with our, you know, consensus on that there. Some people would disagree and say, oh, no, absolutely not. I want that. But for those who agree with what we just said, that probably wouldn't be emotionally healthy. Does that mean that they're not going to be tempted to do it?
Oh, yeah. Well, and you're seeing it in movies already, right? You know, obviously the de-aging of actors and stuff like that. And I was reading this article about, you know, because in the new Indiana Jones movie, there's just like really, really compelling de-aging of Harrison Ford that just looks so real, better than anything that, you know, had come before. And you're seeing more and more of this kind of stuff. And it's like, wow, are actors' careers now going to be extended like way longer? And then what about after they die? It's like now we can have CGI Harrison Ford when he, you know, if he ever passes away. You know, that's, I don't know. I feel like there's like all this, and this is why I love having you in here, because you think about these kind of things. Would you consider yourself a futurist? That's when I think of you. I think like you what you just said about like you like to play things out. And I feel like a lot of people, they're just interacting like right here. Like, okay, well, do I want to do this? Yeah, I'll go download this AI thing. And I feel like that's one of the things I find so interesting about you is you seem to have this ability to kind of play things out into the future. I don't know. Do you agree with that?
I mean, I agree with the description that you just... I mean, that's I'm just a big picture thinker. Like if we talk about building something at work, I think about, okay, would people like that now? But then I think about basically, you know, technical debt and what sort of obligation does that create? And is this something that we can sustain and commit to for a long period of time? Or are we going to make people happy now only to make them less happy later when we fail to, you know, do this well long term? And so that's why I sort of have that same thought about and skepticism about, you know, like I said, AI and stuff. It's like, I don't doubt that we can make all this stuff, but I'm almost more skeptical of humans' ability to be consistent and disciplined about using things in a thoughtful and good way, you know, or, you know, making a feature and continuing to support it in a software product the way it should be supported or whatever. So, you know, you asked, do I consider myself a futurist? I mean, I don't know. Aren't futurists people who are usually generally optimistic about the future?
I don't know if that's necessarily true. Maybe. Yeah.
Are they just long-term thinkers? I mean, I'm not a future optimist. I'm actually, I have pretty sobering thoughts about a lot of things, but I'm also, I mean, I'm generally optimistic and I generally think that things will move forward into the future and we'll figure out a way to adapt and stuff. But
well, that's why I think I had you here was like, you know, I don't, like you already said it, you're not like a conspiracy theory. Like,
yeah, not at all.
But I think you have this like, cautious, thoughtfulness.
I'm skeptical.
Skeptical.
You have
a good
to prove
way,
it out. You know, so things don't just work positively because something was set in motion and then it just ends up in a positive place. I mean, it takes, again, people thoughtfully stewarding things to a healthy thing. You know, with like things like renewable energy or like solar or nuclear, right? We could even have like a debate around that.
Yeah, we're broadening this.
How far can we go? I'm way out of my depth on this. But
let's go. Let's go one at a time.
All I know is that people need like energy resources to do stuff. And so people smarter than us are trying to figure out how to do that in a thoughtful way, but they're also creating like massive responsibility, right? And so I'm always just more skeptical of our like complexity and messiness as humans to not fumble things. Like we will, you know.
When are you running for office, Craig? Yeah. That's really what this is.
At this rate, never, because of that de-aging technology. We're just going to get all these freaking old guys that keep doing stuff. You know, we can't get them out of here. And it's so, yes, at this rate, never. And but also, I don't want to sign up for that. Who are the people that are signing up for that?
I know. Well, I mean, it's the wrong people. But I think that is interesting, though. Like, we do need more people who are thinking not just short term, who are not just thinking about, oh, man, this is going to make my job so much easier, or this is going to be cool or fun, or I can make money fast this way. Mm-hmm. You know, see a lot of people jumping on a new technology, whether it's like, you know, NFTs or whatever, you know, trying to gamify all this stuff in the short term instead of like taking a step back, taking like a big, you know, deep breath and like, how might this play out?
Yeah.
You know,
well, just like from a risk standpoint of like, we only have so much time and attention to invest in stuff. So if you can slow down a little bit and think about what do I want to learn more about and get better at and participate in, that's going to be like a game that I can play for a long time or activity I can participate in for a long time versus like go all in on a opportunity or something and then have that go sort of nowhere. Now, I mean, fail fast, people say all kinds of stuff like that, but I'm just saying like
fail forward.
Like NFTs, if you got really, really into that, maybe you're building the future version that's going to be you know, more sustainable and even keel. But if, for the rest of the people who are just sort of like jumping in on a trend, all of their, you know, knowledge about that is currently sort of sitting dormant, you know. The underlying technology of that is obviously here to stay. Like blockchain is different than NFT, right?
I was just going to say, can we talk about that for a second? I love this. We should just call this hot takes. Technology hot takes.
I don't know anything about any of this stuff.
I know. That's what I love about you, though. It's like it's not that you're, you know, an expert on any one of these things, but like kind of the whole thing you think critically of. So I am curious, just, yeah, any like quick hot takes about blockchain technology?
I mean, I think blockchain, it seems like that's the future for a lot of things like contracts and financial stuff, just records and sort of indisputable records and
not super sexy stuff necessarily, but important.
No, it'll solve really important problems. Mm-hmm. But the most important problem isn't like a, you know, scary ape club or whatever
Yacht club. There you go. Man, we are so current.
Yeah.
We are just on trend. Did you jump on the NFT thing? nothing at all?
I don't. Yeah,
did you?
No, like, I don't give money to strangers on the internet. It's just not like a big part of my life. So now strangers give me money on the internet every day.
That's true.
I love, it's great. But,
it's nice to be that.
And I'm trustworthy. You can give money to our company on the internet. We will deliver on what we say we do. But
were you like early adopter in like Bitcoin or Ethereum? Are you in? Were you into any of that stuff, or are you?
No, I mean, I had a client before we sort of went all in on lens distortions. I was doing some consulting, and I had a client who was big into Bitcoin, and they asked if they could pay me in Bitcoin. And so I like was like, I guess. And I set up a wallet and all of that. Yeah, and like when it had multiplied quite a bit, I sold it. Way before it multiplied like it did in the last few years.
So you should have held on to that a little longer.
Yeah, but I made a good decision knowing that the future wasn't, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't feel bad about my decision at all because it wasn't foolish in the least bit, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, do I wish hindsight's 2020, but
of course.
You know, that's the thing. You can't really control that. So you got to make decisions you can live with. And I'm pretty macro, like risk averse. Like the number one rule of business and of life basically is like, don't die, right? So like you get paid by a client in something, and then like that money is worth more money a few years later, like that is like a good thing. Could that money be worth nothing if you hold on to a few years more? Like I thought, like, yeah, maybe, you know, who knows? I don't know anything about this. Also, I don't know enough about this or care enough about this to track it closely and understand where it's headed, what its momentum is, anything like that. So right. Like know what you know and know what you don't know, and then just sleep, do what you can do to sleep at night, you know? So that's like,
so that's the clip right there.
Yeah.
Okay. So speaking of hot takes, I like this. You do have so many good ones. Any hot takes on Elon Musk, Twitter becoming X, any of that brand
it's,
stuff?
I mean, it's interesting.
Are you an Elon Musk fan?
I would not say I'm a fan, but I'm also not. He's a very complicated person.
Yeah,
he obviously has done incredible things, and obviously because he's got some serious chips on his shoulder, which is a just understandable thing. A lot of ways I kind of feel for him, you know.
Right.
But I mean, obviously incredibly impressive person, doing things on a scale that you or I never will, you know.
Well, speak for yourself.
Yeah, well, all right. Well,
you haven't seen how many views this video is going to get, obviously.
Well, yeah. I mean, our contentment will stop, you know, far short of that. The things that he's motivated to do. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't have a lot of. I don't think X is going away. I don't think that it will just completely fold up and flop or anything like that. I mean, I think was changing it to X a good move. I don't know. Twitter had so much brand equity. It's great, whatever. But he's not trying to stay true to what it originally was. I think he sees it as a thing that he can kind of evolve into what his original dream for a thing called X was, right? I mean, he became part of PayPal because he had started something called X, right?
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know that. Forgotten.
He owned X.com or was a founder of X.com, right. And that merged with PayPal and became the successful
like
PayPal.
Like how long ago? I mean, this was like
2000,
a long
early
time
2000s,
ago, right.
I think, maybe late 90s. And so I think he still had X.com or something. That's why he was able to do it.
I think he lost it and then had to get it again.
Okay.
And there's an interesting story here for sure. He
probably just paid like a couple $100 million to get it or something.
Didn't have to think twice.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's fascinating. You know, it's not like I'm scouring the internet looking for other people's hot takes on him because, you know, you just bump into those without looking for them. But people say like, you know, he thrives on chaos. Like this is what he does. So,
Well, is that new? There's that new biography about him.
Yeah,
Walter Isaacson.
No, but I listened to an interview with Walter Isaacson about it, and it made me kind of want to read it. But yeah, I think it's a helpful thing for people just to understand. Like, you don't do that great of things without being haunted by some serious weighty stuff. You know,
right.
Like Elon Musk believes that we should, you know, go to Mars because it's our only hope for humanity. And so he's like, no one else is working hard enough on this. Like, that's my understanding is that he's actually operating from a very firm conviction that we have to save humanity. And so let's do this.
That's the key to it. And you believe that as well?
I don't think we're going to save ourselves. So
that's well said.
Bitcoin, I think, will save us.
Bitcoin, that's right. See, the Bored Ape Yacht Club will save us.
Yes.
You've heard it first here.
In the end, when AI comes for us, lean on your Bored Ape.
That's right. Lean on your Bored Ape. So we've talked about Elon. We've talked about a lot of things. I love this. This is going to be really fun to cut up into little shorts. I want to know, what are your thoughts about Apple? You know, going into the future, obviously, you know, Apple had Steve Jobs back in the day. I don't even know how many years it's been now that Steve Jobs has passed on.
I believe he passed away in 2011.
Wow. That's crazy to think if that's true. And I'm sure you know. So
I don't know. Like everything in this conversation, I am speaking out of turn. So
we'll have to cut that. What any thoughts around Apple, kind of like what they're doing right now? Apple Vision Pro, like, do you have a hot take on that, or any of the technology that they're dabbling with?
Their move to their own processors has been great. You know, they're making really great processors really fast. It's a big leap from where they were at before. I had I bought a computer in 2014 and I've been using it all the way up till now. And it was like the most overclocked every bell and whistle you could get. And it was getting me by. But then I bought the cheapest MacBook, just the most basic one.
Yeah.
And like our CTO was telling me, he's like, if you buy the cheapest one, it is going to be like 10 times better than what you currently have. And what I had was working fine. It could do everything I needed. Sure. And I got this, the most basic MacBook Air. And it is like, this is night and day. This is insane. And so we just went through a big jump. And I'm not smart enough to talk about it, but I know like engineers have been talking about like, we went through a pretty big leap in computing power. Mm-hmm. Kind of there. But what I wonder about with that, again, my skepticism is like, well, so will we just sort of take that for granted and say, cool, we'll just build like, you know, more resource heavy software applications that, you know, mm-hmm. then put a heavier load for that processor to handle or whatever. But I don't know. That's kind of getting in the nitty gritty. I think Apple overall, at the current moment, they're not doing anything that's super, super interesting at like a broad cultural level. Mm-hmm. That we can see. And I think that's what's interesting is that they have always walked this fine line between like appeal to the masses and making culturally relevant like technology. Mm-hmm. You know, Steve Jobs, classic bicycle of the mind, and it's standing at the intersection of humanities and technologies. Those were kind of his ideas that he stole from someone else, turns out. Not stole, borrowed.
Was it you?
Yes.
12-year-old Craig said that one time.
I'm actually 100 years old, and because of this de-aging technology, I look very young. Very young, as in like a 30-something dad young. But
that's the look he really wanted to go for.
Yes, I wanted it to be believable.
I could have gone to 25, but decided to... How old are you? 33.
I think I don't have any reason to put a number to this or a timeline, but I'm just sort of like the new iPhone just came out and everyone's like mad. It seems like you didn't make anything new. You just made a different color and charged more for it or whatever.
Right. You hear that a lot.
Yeah. I'm guessing in the next, everyone's kind of been saying this, but 5 years or whatever, they'll come what happens when Apple applies their way of thinking and their way of making things available to the everyday person over time. And like, the way they did with the iPod or whatever to self-driving cars or to, you know, other things. So, yeah.
Do you see Apple Vision Pro as like part of that innovation, like a step in the right direction? Or are you kind of like...
It seems really niche to me. It might become a mainstream thing, but it's so expensive and so much technology in it that it can only really be used by like mostly creative professionals. That's like, I feel like who can justify it or like... Just wealthy people who want to spend money on something.
Will you guys get one? Lens distortions?
No. I mean, people on our team might buy them, but we don't have a...
You're like, we don't have that in the budget.
We don't have a reason to buy one.
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated by it. I think it's cool. I'm not like anti it. I just, it's not in its current form, like changing the world.
Well, Raj and I talked about it a little bit when they first announced it, and... I'm like you. I'm pretty skeptical about new technology, and it's kind of like I feel like it's so easy for this stuff to kind of run our lives, and I'm not really into the hype. But Raj kind of helped me like see kind of, you know, use cases, and even watching some of Apple's talking about it. I think the one that really kind of got me like curious is just the idea of like, you put this on and you could be surrounded by screens, you know, kind of like Tony Stark, but like kind of in your head, you mm-hmm. know? And that's interesting. Like, you know, if you could really see like the work that you're working on, like your, if your laptop screen was now, you know, surrounding you,
yeah.
you know, in some ways that might be like the worst thing ever, but it could also, it has some interesting, you know, implications. I do feel like it looks super goofy when you see it in the video and like couple sitting on a couch, both wearing them and watching like a movie or something. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's very, you know, but I mean, a lot of times new technology seems a little weird too.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of bored by what is the final 10% of like completely optimizing the idea of watching a movie or something like that. And maybe right. that it's a way bigger improvement than 10%, but mm-hmm. I can watch a movie on a 10-year-old TV at my house that can't even do 4K or something like that. And if it's a good movie, like get lost in that world. And
right,
so,
right, right.
you know, I don't know.
If it, yeah, is there a point that like technology is like,
I'm trying yeah. to spend less time on technology, yeah, you know, exactly, I'm trying to right. like be on my computer, then close it and like go for a walk, you know, mm-hmm. and like do more of that. Like, so yeah, I'm not trying to figure out ways to get more lost in it because I can already do that with
those. It's so immersive. It's like going for a walk, still very immersive.
Literally the most immersive sort of experience. You go outside and you're surrounded by all kinds
and
of stuff.
And he's talking about a walk in the metaverse, of course, yes. not in real, we, you know, yeah, we don't
I'm
walk
I'm bored
in.
By Apple Vision Pro because I want like Apple space suit that I can like suit up on and then, you know. It can track all my limbs in the metaverse.
Oh, so. Man. Well, we've gone really broad today. We probably should bring this thing home. I'm just trying to think of, like, how to bring it home. Craig, do you have any, you know, especially for creatives now, you know, I think for any of the creative professionals that might be listening, just any parting words of advice to them kind of as they're living in this fast-paced world, specifically with people trying to create meaningful things mm-hmm. and tell stories?
What makes meaningful stories will never change. What makes the importance of people applying taste to things will never change. And so, yeah, I mean, understanding the principles of a good story, understanding taste is a subjective thing, but understanding what makes things tasteful or perceived as tasteful? Why do these people think this is tasteful? Why do like develop your own taste, develop conviction around that, and then apply that to whatever technology is going on. The same person, like back in the day before electronics existed, like the taste of a like fine art painter could be applied to the craft of filmmaking. It can translate, right? But that can't be just like you can't hand someone that taste in a product or something like that. So technology is, it's sort of unopinionated. You have to apply the opinion to it. And that opinion is meaningful because it's coming from someone you respect or someone you trust. People hire you because they trust you. They trust your expertise. So that's what I'd say is like, be relational, understand what makes humans tick, and develop like your own taste, your own convictions. Don't worry as much about the playbook. Don't worry much about what gets the short-term results, but like, yeah, develop that taste, figure out what is the, you know, areas of this that I want to be in for the long haul, and then make sure you adapt to technologies that's there, but know that like there's always a place for thoughtful, creative people to do stuff long term. So be optimistic in that sense, you know? And I guess I'd leave it with that.
Craig, thanks for being on the podcast.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us today on Growing Your Fruitful Brand. If you found today's show helpful, don't forget to subscribe and consider sharing it with someone who might also enjoy it.
And if you'd like to work with Fruitful on a branding, website, or messaging project of your own, you can always reach out on our website, fruitful.design.
Until next time, don't forget to grow
something good.
You jerk.